Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic. It's time now for Cuz Radio.
What up, Cuz?
Deshaun Jackson gets a block. Are you kidding?
Talking with the Cuz.
Yo, Cuz. How you doing?
Stairs rips one into the night.
Stolen by the doctor. Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
Look, Cuz, don't even try it, okay?
Now, here's Anthony Gargano.
Why don't you get the hell out of here, Cuz?
What is going on, everyone? Welcome on in to 97.5 The Fanatic. This is the Anthony Gargano Show. I am Hunter Brody, filling in for the Cuz all week. Connor Thomas is producing today's show, filling in for the Chunis all week as well. So we have you covered. We're excited at how one day makes such a big difference. Connor and I were joking around yesterday before we left the studio. All we need is a Phillies win and a Braves loss to juice up where the fightin' Phils are. And that's exactly what we got as we are witnessing the Phils 3 games back of the wild card, 3.5 games back of the division after taking down the Washington Nationals by a score of 7-4. No JT Realmuto in the lineup, but you had your ace. You had your number one guy, Zach Wheeler. Didn't have a Zach Wheeler-type performance, though, and quite frankly, it hasn't been that way all August long. As you dive back into his game log and you discuss what he's done, hasn't been pretty. And we talked about his innings pitched. We talked about how much you had to rely on him so heavily throughout the entire season. Last night, he gave you 6 innings. After the 5th, I tweeted this out before he went out in the 6th. He even batted as well. I'm thinking, you know what? Not his night tonight. Not Zach Wheeler's night. Joe Girardi continues to push that button, though, and it worked out tremendously. He threw about 8 pitches in the 6th, and it was quick. But after 5, he allowed 5 hits, 4 earned runs, and 4 walked batters. A lot of full counts early on. Walked the bases loaded early on. And that's after the Phils had a 3-run lead. So Bryce Harper hits a 2-run bomb. You tack on another run. Your ace has a 3-run lead to start things off against the depleted Washington Nationals squad, and he's walking the bases. It did not look pretty, but getting through 6, considering the circumstances after 5, was impressive, and you desperately needed that to happen. Looking at some of his other outings, though, against the Rays, he went 8 innings, allowed 5 earned runs, 10 hits, struck out 10, but allowed 2 home runs. Dating back to Arizona, 6 2/3, 6 earned runs. Dating back to Cincinnati, 6 innings pitched, 4 earned runs. He's running out of gas a bit, but still has enough to hold the fort down because it's Zach Wheeler. How much is left, though? And that's one of my concerns as we look forward to whatever's going to happen. Here's what I know, though. I've seen this story 6 billion times this season where they pull you close enough to make you wonder what if. Where now you're looking through the Atlanta Braves schedule, you're looking at the Cincinnati Reds, the St. Louis Cardinals, you're diving deep into the opponent's schedule. Possibly do you have a chance? I've seen this a billion times, and I've been let down a billion times. With that all being said, let's get foolish. Let's get silly, and let's just appreciate the moment. That's what I do during this Philly season. Let's just live in the moment. I said it during the New York Mets series. I actually hosted on these very airwaves right after that sweep. It was a Sunday afternoon game. The sweep happened against the Mets at Citizens Bank Park. And there were caller after caller after caller saying, how far could we go? If they take this division, can they win a first round game? And I'm saying, cool the Jets. Let's live in the moment and just appreciate that this is a great feeling. The rise of the fan base is awesome. Red October, it's just a good vibe. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves because they're eventually going to lose a baseball game. That 8-game winning streak isn't going to continue for the rest of eternity. You see the Dodgers, you see the Reds coming up, so there will be adversity hit, and that's what happened. So right now, I just want to appreciate the moment that it's August 31st. We're one day from September, and it might be fake little tiny bit optimism, tiny, silly, little, tiny, minute optimism, but they're hanging around. I don't believe in it. Me, personally, I don't believe in it, but just the fact that my goal every year is get me to football season with baseball that I can at least put some sort of emotion to, where we're not watching Baltimore Orioles version of baseball, Diamondbacks, Colorado Rockies. Give me something. We got something. And this is what they do. They keep you involved in this tug of war action pretty much nightly. The problem is you got Matt Moore on the bump tonight. What's going to happen? I say this now, and he's going to end up winning the baseball game. That's what happens with this team, though. Everyone I've expected to cool off. Here's Ronald Torres last night with a triple that knocks in three runs. Here's Jankowski playing. Brad Miller with a bomb. Everyone that I said 3 months ago, this isn't going to last forever, they keep producing in their own way. Here's the issue, though. Because they're utility players and they're playing every day way too much than they should be playing, they are playing to their max capacity. I do have to admit that Ronald Torres, for the length of time that he's been producing, it's pretty stellar. But when a utility player plays to his highest capability, I think you get 500 baseball. That's why they're utility guys. You're using these players way too much. The Nick Maytons, the Luke Williams, the Jankowskis, the Torreses, the Brad Millers even. When you play these guys every day, even though they're playing the best they can, well, the best they can isn't very good. That's why they're utility players. That's why you're where you're at right now. But ultimately, they're 3 games above 500. I wouldn't be surprised in a couple days if we're looking at it and they're 500 again, because it's been the flow of the season. I'm watching every night, though. And I told you yesterday, Connor, when you think about the Chunis train, because that's the best way to describe the Phillies on this station. The Chunis train, for me, we got the estimate yesterday. And I was wondering and questioning, was the estimate for the train worth putting that much money into something so beaten down? Is it worth putting $5,000 into this car, or should I just get a new one? That's the question that was asked. And I'm still somewhat conflicted. I don't have the answer just yet. Connor, good morning.
Morning, man.
How you doing today?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. The Phillies are 3.5 games back of the division and 3 games back of the wild card, which yesterday I claimed was just a false hope. The wild card opening up that discussion was false hope. Or was I wrong, though?
So if you listen to the John Kincaid show this morning, you already know where I stand. And I'm catching a lot of flack for it, but I am still out on the Phillies. I don't think they have a chance to make the playoffs. And for me, what weighs into it more, the 131 games they've already played is what weighs into it for me. What they've done recently, you get recency bias. But ultimately, when it comes down to these stretch September runs, pushing for October baseball, water levels out. That's the beautiful thing about a long season like Major League Baseball has, 162 games. Water finds its level, and the Phillies' level is not reaching the playoffs, especially with this roster that they currently have with all the injuries, the COVID issues, stuff like that. I just don't see them having enough to make it. When the Chunis train was in my shop, I claimed it was totaled, so that's why we sent it down the road for a different estimate, but I still don't see how they reach the playoffs. I like how they're playing. I want them to, too. Don't get me wrong. I want them to make the playoffs, but I don't see a way they get there with their inconsistent play.
I absolutely agree with you. I don't see a way they do it. I've seen enough of a sample size. That's one thing I really hold my hat on. I like to dive back and say, okay, well, what tells me that something's going to change? I've seen this team play for not only just this year. This has been a handful of seasons with this unit, with this core, where a common theme is they fail late and they don't come up with enough wins. And a lot of these series, they let slip away. If you go back to the Pittsburgh series, you win 1 of 3. Now, that started an 8-game win streak, but that cannot happen. We will dive back to that Arizona Diamondback series as where the momentum was truly lost, I feel, at the end of September when we're not watching the Phillies in the postseason. It'll go back to the desert. That's where they lost it. That's where everything kind of went south. And yeah, you know what? They have a 4-game win streak, and I got to give them credit for beating up on the opponents, because there are times where they don't do that. Ultimately, though, I do feel very similar to you, where I've seen enough to know. At the same time, I'm willing to open up to this foolishness of, come on now, here we go. And I'm aware that it's not real. It's fake fun. And I'm okay for fake fun. Why not? Why can't I? Why can't I every night go, ho, 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 we got a chance, even though I don't truly believe we have a chance?
Yeah, I can't buy into the fool's gold. It's not the person I am. Maybe that makes me jaded.
I'm not buying.
No, you just said you were opening up to it.
In a joking matter to have some fun.
I can't do it because I'm going to start to believe. I'm going to allow myself. I give myself a little taste and I'm going to believe again. And they're going to end up hurting me. Because you saw it. They had a hot stretch right before the All-Star break where they absolutely whooped up on the Chicago Cubs. They go to Boston. They play really well against the Red Sox. It looks like the offense has finally broken out. And then you come out and you lose 2-3 to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Then you go on an 8-game win streak, and you look like you finally figured it out. It looks like they're really hot, and they were, and then you go out and you get swept by the Arizona Diamondbacks. Every time they have the ups, they fall back and they have the downs, because ultimately what this team has proved to us over the first 131 games of the season is they're about 500, and they're very inconsistent. And all we've seen for the Braves in the second half of the season is that they have become a wagon of a team that refused to lose multiple games or multiple series in a row. So what part of that equation has the Phillies catching them? The only thing that isn't really in consideration, or wasn't when I decided I was out, I thought the wild card was out of reach, and now it's very much in play mathematically, but I'm still thinking they're done.
Okay, so does that open up more optimism when you look at the Cincinnati Reds, who are fighting with the St. Louis Cardinals right now, two teams ahead of the Phillies in the wild card race as it stands today? The LA Dodgers are 83-49 with the first wild card spot. Cincinnati Reds in the second spot at 71-62. You have the Padres that are insanely struggling, the St. Louis Cardinals, and then your Philadelphia Phillies, 3 games over .500 and 3 games back. Does that open up a legitimate avenue? Do you believe the wild card is now in play to sneak on in to the playoffs? Everything you say is absolutely right. I don't have a counter. I can't even push back. I believe everything you're saying. I'm just more open to the dumb excitement. I'm just open to the fool's gold. Let's just run with it because, well, we got 2 more weeks until football, and we'll see what ends up happening. Here's my fear. With Zach Wheeler, you need him going, and you have no idea what Aaron Nola you're going to have every night. Zach Eflin, the whole knee issue came back up, and then the COVID stuff hit this team. Marshawn's playing over Andrew Knapp. That might be a positive at the end of the day because Andrew Knapp is unplayable, in my opinion. I know you want to dive through the ERAs of these starting pitchers with JT compared to Andrew Knapp. Andrew Knapp hits 150. You cannot play Andrew Knapp. It's just unplayable. And he hasn't even been good behind the plate defensively. There's been balls that's been getting through him. JT as well. I've been underwhelmed with him. Even with the struggling JT, I'll take that over Andrew Knapp a billion out of 1 billion times. If I'm going to get a 31-pitch first inning from Zach Wheeler where full counts are consistently happening, that fastball command was not existent early on, do you have that chance? Is that another reason why it's even uglier? Because you don't even, what, Ranger Suarez? He added a slider. Whoop-dee-doo. I like the fact that he added a slider. He needs to if he's going to be a starter. And just to throw this out there for some statistics, the previous 2 starts of Ranger Suarez, he threw 6 sliders in 185 pitches. His last outing, he threw 13 sliders in 95. He's been juggled around the bullpen, closer role, long relief. If he wants to start, he needs that extra pitch, and it's clear that he has brought that to the table. It's going to take a lot longer than just a handful of starts to do that. I don't know without Zach Wheeler, though, how this is going to happen. And the trajectory of this August run with Wheeler is he's running out of gas.
Yeah, unfortunately, you had to ride him a lot during the summer months to get to this point because Aaron Nola has had a really rough year. Zach Eflin has spent some time on the IL with that knee issue. And you're dealing with a back end that was Vince Velasquez at points, Matt Moore, Chase Anderson, Ranger Suarez converting from a reliever to a starter. So you just, honestly, you have no other option than hoping you can continue to ride Wheeler. But you're like, you've got the flat tire and you have the space saver put on. And you're just hoping you can make it to the destination. It's still a nice car. You're still driving a BMW, but with the space saver on there, your mileage is limited when it comes to Zach Wheeler. So I don't know if he'll continue to hold up. He's gotten away with it recently just because he is such a dominant pitcher normally. But It's going to be a tough spot of the rest of the Philly season. Another reason why I still think that they're not bound for the playoffs.
There were three decisions last night with Joe Girardi that I did not necessarily approve. Well, I guess two. One I understood. You just didn't have many options. The first one was Zach Wheeler in the sixth. I wouldn't have personally done it. It worked out. I have to tip my cap. And he's your guy. If you're talking about the Aaron Nolas and the Zach Wheelers of your staff, if you're going to have a longer leash, I'm okay with that compared to giving the leash to Matt Moore, giving the leash to some of your fours and your fives in your rotation. So I didn't personally love it. He was at 87 pitches after five, four walk batters, four earned runs. I would have went in another direction. It worked out. Number two was after Connor Brogdon got into some trouble there, Archie Bradley was the one that got selected to get out of the jam. I don't know what else you really could have done due to what bodies were available. I just didn't have a lot of faith in Archie Bradley considering what his last outing was like. Even though you've seen a rise in his play, you've seen some good action from Archie Bradley throughout this backstretch. His last outing was a bit ugly. Joe left him in too long, but he did what he needed to. He really did. He cashed in, bang, got some big timeouts, and Alvarado in the ninth. Not a big Alvarado guy. He can't be closing games. He can't throw strikes, and he puts runners on. That is recipe for disaster when you throw a lot of balls and give them free passes. My buddy was texting me throughout the entire ninth inning. Can't do it, Broads. Cannot put him in. And my response was, who would you put in then? And he responded with J.D. Hammer. He responded with Sam Coonrod. Anyone but. While I would have been okay with many options other than Jose Alvarado, you can't tell me J.D. Hammer was an obvious. You can't tell me Coonrod is an obvious. There's no obvious when Ian Kennedy is not available. So that's where Joe has his hands tied behind his back. What do you want him to do? Be a magician? Your closer's not there. Jose is your probably best option by default. I just don't love it because I've seen that story too many times.
Right, and he's a heart attack of a pitcher, Jose Alvarado. But Joe Girardi said it earlier in the season after a game in his post-game availability on why they like to use Alvarado in those spots. And basically, he feels with Alvarado, you're not going to give up the home run. You got two options. Either he's going to walk the guy. Well, three options. Either he's going to walk the guy, strike the guy out, or you're going to get a ball hit on the ground somewhere. It's just the nature of how he pitches. So you kind of swallow the wildness by basically taking the home run out of the equation. And that's why they like him in that closer role, because a home run is a game changer there. Walking two guys, if you have that getaway stuff, which he does, you can kind of get away with it at points. It's a heart attack for the fans, but it's an interesting perspective on how to use him as a reliever. I don't love it either. I wish we could have a Brad Lidge 2008 style guy come out who's going to be perfect all season long, but that guy doesn't exist. So, like you said, it was another example of Girardi's kind of, he's hogtied at this point by what his bullpen is. And luckily, the moves worked out last night.
I'll tell you what, he got out Juan Soto in the ninth. Good play by Marchand to get the lead runner at second base. Very heads-up baseball, if you will. And Josh Bell looked as if he wanted no business being up at the plate. Those cuts were embarrassing. For such a good hitter, those cuts were not even close to being competitive. I'm not telling you it's easy to hit a 100-mile-per-hour fastball by a Jose Alvarado, though. I just expected a more competitive AB from their meat of their order. So that's the Philadelphia Phillies. I want to know from you, is it okay to have this silly, goofy, entertaining hope, even though you know it's not real? That's where I am. Do you look at the wild card as an actual possibility? And maybe you don't like my approach, and you truly believe in your heart of hearts they are in the fight, and it's not silly and goofy, it's real. It's also a day for the Eagles to trim down their rosters, or their roster cut some players. We're going to keep an eye on that all show long. And also, we're going to play a game with you, the callers, and you can call in at 610-632-0975. We had FanFest tickets to give away all show long, and we're going to go through the Eagles roster, and we're just going to throw around some names. We're going to ask you if you believe they're going to get cut or they're going to stay. We're not going to give you, you know, the Jalen Hurtses of the world. That's an obvious. But more of those bubble players. How do you feel? You think they stay? You think they're cut? And that's where we begin today's show. 610-632-0975 is the phone number to hop on board. We're going to have some fun today. Scott Lauber, who covers the Phillies for the Philadelphia Inquirer, will join us in the 1 p.m. hour. I want to get a thoughts on this run. There's some other things, too, that I really want to look at since he covers the team and dives a little bit deeper. I'm curious, have you seen real quick Bryson Stott and his numbers right now?
He is raking.
Wow.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Wow. I don't know if I should, ironically enough, as we're talking about the Phillies, get sucked into this, but I'm really curious what Scott Lauber has to say. He's tearing it up. Is this real? Is this a product of the double-A ball that he's playing in? What is it? But he's doing some special things. All right, 610-632-0975. We will talk about it all. Ryan, we will begin with you on the other side. You are listening to the Anthony Gargano Show. I'm Hunter Brody, filling in for the Cuz.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
And right now, joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline is Scott Lauber, who covers the Phillies for the Inquirer. Scott, what's going on, man? Thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, Hunter. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, I'm watching some winning baseball, four in a row, five games in a row, a score in seven runs total, which is just crazy considering what the bottom half of the lineup looks like. But we'll start here. Zach Wheeler pitched yesterday, and the August month hasn't been his best, and maybe a lot of that has to do with the innings pitched throughout. What have you seen in Zach Wheeler's performances throughout this month of August?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's been a little less consistent, a little more uneven. You know, I do think you're probably right. I think the innings are starting to pile up. I think everybody in baseball wasn't really sure what to expect this year from their from pitching, in the sense that everybody had, you know, a 60 game season last year and was going to have to readjust, right, to a full season and a full load of innings. So nobody knew what that was going to look like in terms of injuries and performance, and especially performance down the stretch, because they're well past what they did last year. So yeah, he's getting up there. He's pushing. He's going to get close to 200 innings. He's on pace to sail right by that, as a matter of fact. And, you know, maybe that's a little what you're seeing, some of the dog bays a little bit. You know, he hasn't spoken about fatigue or put it on that, but I think it's fair to assume that there's some of that in play. And, I'm sure that they will try as best they can to keep an eye on that, as they get into September. But, you know, I think the pitching, you know, in a weird way, the starting pitching has been kind of the least of their issues. Whether it be Wheeler, Kyle Gibson's been really good since they traded for him. Ranger Suarez has been really good since they put him in the rotation. Even Aaron Nola, it looks as though he's maybe, sort of turning the corner a bit on his season. You know, really it's some other areas. And I think, you know, I think that Wheeler is still pitching well enough, I guess, to, you know, to keep him in games when he pitches. And that's really what they're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that stood out to me during the moment, I did not like him going back out for the sixth, but that's the difference in some of your top end guys last night, where he struggled through five. He had four walk batters. He had a lot of full counts and 87 pitches. But Girardi looks at Wheeler as, hey, we need you. We need you to go one more. And he had a really quick sixth. So were you surprised with him going back in there?
No, not so much. I mean, look at what happened in his previous start, right, where he came out for the ninth. And not only did he come out for the ninth, but then when he got in trouble in the ninth, Girardi stuck with him. And I think a lot of us felt like, you know, maybe the confidence, you know, you're certainly going to have confidence in your top guys, and you should, but maybe he took it a little too far. It just goes to show you, though, you know, how he feels about Wheeler. Like, in most cases, you know, he feels like, look, Wheeler is the best guy to get him through that particular inning. And I think that's how he felt there, you know, in the sixth. He didn't want to go to the bullpen that early. That was obvious. And, you know, so I think he was going to try to get Wheeler to get him through just a little bit more. And that's he's given that leeway to Wheeler. He gives it to Nola quite often. Those are guys he trusts to help him get through push through a situation where maybe with other guys he would go to the bullpen.
Yeah, I'm willing to give my top end of the rotation more of a leash for sure. It just didn't seem like he had it, but he proved me wrong. He went back out in that sixth and got the job accomplished. You mentioned Ranger Suarez. I'm just curious your thoughts on what you think he could be for this team, not only just this year specifically, but in general. Now, he's added the bit of the slider. He threw 13 sliders his last performance in his 95 pitches, which is a significant jump compared to his previous two starts. What do you think he could be if he added another pitch?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got, especially if that slider keeps coming along, he has got a starter's repertoire. Now, you know, I was covering the series in Arizona earlier in the month where that was the one start he made where he got hit a little bit, gave up a bunch of hits. A lot of them were singles. A lot of them were through the infield, but nevertheless, he was giving up hits. And, you know, you looked at it and you were like, okay, he's throwing his sinker. He's throwing his four seamer. And then he's throwing a changeup, but no curveball. There wasn't much slider in that game. And you began to ask yourself, like, okay, he's essentially a two-pitch starting pitcher that normally doesn't get the job done. Does he need to develop a breaking pitch? Does he need to develop something other than, you know, the fastballs and the changeup? That slider, as you mentioned, looks like it's a pitch that might be coming along. And if it does, you know, I think he could be an effective starting pitcher. But I do think he's going to need to continue working on it, or perhaps he's going to need to experiment with a curveball, just something, right? Another speed to kind of get everybody off of that sinker. That's really his bread and butter pitch is the sinker. He throws it more than anything. And, you know, I was looking at his numbers the other day since he's been a starter, and, you know, he throws the sinker an awful lot, and he's got the second highest ground ball rate of any starting pitcher in baseball in the month of August, 60-something percent. It's like 64%. That's Suarez when he's at his best, right? He's going to put the ball on the ground. He's not going to give up home runs. He hasn't given one up yet in any of his six starts, which is pretty impressive. You know, so that's who he is. And, you know, I do think he's going to need to develop that extra pitch. I also think that it will help Ranger Suarez in the long term if the Phillies can shore up their defense, especially on the infield, because a lot of those ground balls that he gets would get gobbled up rather than getting through if especially the left side of the defense can get better. So that'll be a priority of theirs as a team in the offseason to try to fix their defense, which we know is not very good. And he's the kind of pitcher where it would really help if they're able to do that.
Yeah, it would help him. It'll help Kyle Gibson. It would help Zach Wheeler. It would help a lot of guys that are, you know, pitching for some ground balls at times, for sure. All right, let's look at this offense, because as I alluded to, they have been scoring runs. They've scored 7 runs in their last 5 games, which is just crazy. Is this sustainable when you're overplaying the Jankowskis, the Millers, the Marchands? And I know you have to by default, but if we're looking at this race, the Atlanta Braves took care of business against the Giants. They lost last night, though, in L.A. Is this sustainable with utilizing this many utility players for as long as they have?
No, I mean, it's not. And I'm honestly surprised that it has gone on for 5 consecutive games now where they've scored that many runs with such a patchwork lineup. And, you know, I'm inclined to chalk it up. Well, I don't want to take anything away from them, right? They've obviously hit the ball well. They've kind of kept the line moving. Harper's gotten the big hits when they've needed him to. A lot of guys have gotten big hits when they've needed him to. Brad Miller had a few big ones last night. So I don't want to take anything away from them. They've obviously played very well. But I think you have to look too at who they're playing. I mean, they played Arizona over the weekend, played Washington last night, tonight, and tomorrow. That is not a good team down there. That's a team that's very much rebuilding, very much in transition. Don't know how many of those guys you're going to see as long-term parts of the Nationals' future. And, you know, the Marlins coming up over the weekend, they have some decent pitching as we've seen over the course of the last few years, but also not a very good team overall. And that's okay. Look, they have a very, we've talked about their soft schedule down the stretch. It's really, really soft. I mean, you know, the gap between, in every season, you always have teams, especially down the stretch of a season, that are just playing out the string, right? But I think the fact that the trade deadline was so active this year, the gap between the good teams and the bad teams, to me, I have a hard time recalling, you know, a year where there are this many teams that really are truly bad teams. You know, Arizona, Washington, they've got games left with Baltimore, who's terrible, Pittsburgh, terrible. Colorado's not a good team. They have games left with them. You know, it's a very soft schedule down the stretch. They're not going to see a whole lot of good pitching. So maybe that's the counterweight to the whole thing. Like, you look at their lineup and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that they're scoring 7 runs a game with all the guys you mentioned playing every day. But they're also playing bad teams. So if there's, you know, if there's a way for them to continue on scoring a ton of runs, that would be the way to do it. I mean, I felt all along that the schedule was going to keep them playoff relevant down the stretch. It was going to keep them in it to some degree. And I think what you're seeing is that that's the case, that they're, you know, as long as they can continue to beat up on really, really bad teams, they'll be relevant. I mean, they'll be in it. I don't see them completely and totally fading out of the picture.
We're talking to Scott Lauber, who covers the Phillies for the Inquirer. JT Realmuto, how concerning is the shoulder? And now on top of that, you're working with an ankle as well that they're listing day to day.
Yeah, it's a bit of a concern. We don't really know a whole lot about what's going on with that shoulder. I guess it was Gene Segura, right, that tipped us all off in the first place that he was dealing with a shoulder issue. And Realmuto and Joe Girardi have kind of downplayed it a bit since then. And this is part of the difficulty now in the times we're living in. You know, we're not in there in the clubhouse every day. Our access is limited to, you know, talking to players on the field and whatnot. And you don't, it's not that, you know, when we were in the clubhouse, it's not like you could walk into the trainer's room and see what was going on, but you could certainly have a longer conversation with a player at his locker. You could kind of bump into people where you may not see them the way it is now. So we kind of have to go a lot on what we're told and what they decide to tell us. And, you know, so as I said, Realmuto and Girardi have kind of downplayed it a bit, but the fact that, you know, one of his teammates decided to mention that he's dealing with a shoulder thing tells you that it's something that, you know, is a daily issue for him, that he's got to, at the very least, receive treatment on or maintain or whatnot. And that's concerning. You know, also, you don't just decide to move the guy to first base for them. You know, we don't know yet how the playing time will be divided, but it does sound like Girardi wants to play him quite a bit at first base down the stretch. And it's not something you'd normally do. There are other ways to keep his bat in the lineup, and, you know, he's not a guy who rests a whole lot anyway, plays more than just about any catcher in the league. So, I'd have to say that whatever's going on with his shoulder, you'd have to say that you're concerned about it. And, you know, hopefully we'll find out more about it as time goes on, whether it's going to require anything in the offseason beyond just rest. Hopefully it's just a rest situation. But this will be the third year in a row, right, that he's come to the finish line with some sort of physical issue, and whether it's his knee a couple of years ago or the issue last year with the hip or this year with the shoulder, apparently. And, he's a catcher who's got 4 more years on his contract. So you're hoping that, you know there are going to be physical issues. You're just hoping that he's going to be able to stay behind the plate the majority of the time, because that's really where his biggest value is.
With Rhys Hoskins out and Brad Miller getting overexposed playing every single day, although as of late he's had some of his clutcher moments, would it make sense to bring up Alec Boehm and play him at first to have maybe his bat in the lineup as a righty with JT behind the plate? Or would you rather have JT at first base with Marshawn behind the plate? What do you think would be a better option? Or is Boehm just going to be AAA for the rest of the way?
So it depends on what you're prioritizing. You know, I think if you're prioritizing offense, I think it probably helps you more to have Boehm in the lineup and JT in the lineup together. And then, you know, when, you know, again, if JT was healthy and could get behind the plate, 80% of the remaining games, then I think for an offensive standpoint, that's how you'd optimize your offense. But, we've talked about how important it is that they catch the ball, especially with these starting pitchers who put the ball on the ground a lot. And, if you're willing to sacrifice a little offense, maybe it's a better thing to have, JT at first base, Marchand behind the plate. Then you can keep JT in the lineup every day and keep him maybe a little bit healthier if that shoulder's really kind of barking. So there's a lot in play, and I think, as I said, I think we're going to find out more about JT's health based on how he's used down the stretch. It's interesting, Girardi's reasoning for moving him to first is, well, we want to keep his bat in the lineup. And as I said, his bat is in the lineup a large majority of the time anyway when he catches. So, I think that there's a lot of moving parts there. I think the one thing that they don't want is they don't want Alec Bohm to come back here and sit on the bench. I don't think that helps them, him or them, long term. I don't think he's not someone who's used to coming off the bench, so I wonder how productive he would be in a role like that. Also, just from a development standpoint, you want him to continue to hit and play every day. And every time we've asked, it doesn't seem like they're inclined to pull him right back up. The minor league season this year goes 2 weeks longer than normal, goes into the middle of September, September 19th, I think. Also, rosters can only expand to 28 this year, not 40. And because of that, I think you're going to see a lot of movement in September. Guys are going to come up and go down as they do all year long because there's no taxi squad you're traveling with the roster expanded to 40. So, they can call him up at various points, and maybe the plan is let him keep playing every day and call him up toward the very end of the minor league season. And maybe you're in a position at that point where JT can give you, two solid weeks behind the plate, and you can get Bohm's bat back in there every day and go from there. It's going to depend on what they need at the time, how they're playing and how everyone is doing health wise to see how all the puzzle pieces fit.
Right. Absolutely. All right. One last quick one before I let you go. Bryson Stott, what are your thoughts on what he's doing right now, specifically in this month of August? Because there's nothing but great things about the damage that he's doing.
Yeah, he's having a really, really good month and a really good finish to the season. It's funny. It's like he's having a really nice month of August, and his buddy Bryce Harper is like having, good luck finding a better hitter on the planet right now than Bryce Harper with the month that he's had in August. We're not talking about him enough, to be honest with you, Harper. He started 41 consecutive games. I think he's played all but five innings in those 41 games, and the numbers he's putting up are pretty crazy. I don't know why anyone's pitching to him. I really don't, given that there's not a whole lot.
You don't think Andrew McCutchen's providing enough support behind him there in that cleanup spot?
Do you?
I mean, no, absolutely not.
I don't know who would, right? I mean, I guess if Hoskins was healthy, that would be different. If Realmuto was healthy, that would be different. So anyway, I'm off on a tangent, but yeah, Stott's buddy, Harper's buddy, Bryson Stott, he's having a pretty nice month there in Reading, and, it's good to see. I don't think anyone ever looked at Bryson Stott and questioned whether he would hit. I think most people thought he'd hit. I think there's still a question, though, about where he'll play, whether he'll stay at shortstop or move to second. He's played mostly shortstop, as far as I know. It's good to see. They're hopeful that he will be somebody who could contribute sooner than later, meaning, next year at some point, hopefully. And for him to finish strong, as he looks like he's going to do, that's a positive thing in a farm system that doesn't have a whole lot of positive
Absolutely.
Stuff going for it right now.
You nailed it right there.
He's certainly a guy who's opened some eyes.
Absolutely. Scott Lauber, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate your time joining us today.
You bet. Anytime.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. That was Scott Lauber, who covers the Phillies for the Inquirer. Join us on the Comcast Business Hotline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.